Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. It may come as a surprise to you to learn that North Carolina has an official state climatologist, a scientist who leads a staff of 10 professionals charged with monitoring and researching climate issues that impact all 10 million residents of the state. What's more, the position has existed since 1976, long before the widespread recognition of global climate change and the environmental crisis it has spawned. Earlier this week, I got a chance to talk to the state's new climatologist, Dr. Kathy Dello. Dr. Dello is the first permanent director of the state climate office since 2016 and the first woman to hold the position. Well, Kathy Dello, welcome to News and Views. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so you have an exciting job. Maybe a lot of people in North Carolina don't know a whole lot about. For the last few months, you have been our state climatologist, heading our state climate office, another thing that many North Carolinians might not have known existed. Can you give us a little background about the state climate office and what it does?
Yeah, so I'm really excited to be here. I've been here in North Carolina for about 3 months now, but the state climate office has been around for 43 years.
Right.
And it's been at NC State University for most of that time.
The Climate Office predates at least our widespread common knowledge about the reality of climate change. Why did the Climate Office even exist in the first place?
Yeah, so most states do have a state climate office. North Carolina is one of the bigger ones. Uh-huh. And they were set up in the 70s to help constituents, people living in the state, think about their climate issues. So even without climate change, we're making decisions based on climate and weather.
You alluded to climate and weather, and that's another, I think, maybe a basic concept that a lot of people might not even fully have thought about, the difference between, we talk about climate, we talk about weather. Those are different things, right?
The way I like to think about it is weather is your mood and climate's your personality. Weather is, you know, your shorter term, what's happening today. I don't really focus on that. If you asked me if it was going to rain today, I probably don't know and probably don't have my umbrella. But climate is a much longer term view of the average weather conditions.
This plays a huge role in North Carolina when it comes to agriculture and tourism and all the so much of our economy. We actually have different climate zones in our state.
If you group them together, essentially you have the coastal plain, the Piedmont, and the mountains. And North Carolina has the most extreme topography east of the Mississippi. We have the tallest point east of the Mississippi, Mount Mitchell, down to the Atlantic coast.
Right. I mean, we know that it snows up in Boone a lot in the wintertime, not much down at the coast. Are there any other things that we could say about that distinguish these different regions of our state?
We're in this really interesting part of the world, so we really need that tropical precipitation that we get in the summer. And the summertime thunderstorms to keep us out of drought, which we're kind of going into right now.
Right.
And then we do get cold air outbreaks, and the mountains tend to trap the cold air in. And here in Raleigh, we know that the city shuts down at even the mention of snow.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I think as you live here longer, you'll experience some of that.
I've heard about it.
We're heck on sweeping up leaves, though, I'll tell you that. We can get those out of the way pretty quickly. What does the climate office actually do? How do you support the people of the state, the various economies? What is your staff actually doing?
Yeah, so I mentioned we have one of the larger state climate offices in the country. We have 10 full-time folks on staff. What we're doing is original research to support North Carolina people. So anyone who has to make a decision related to weather and climate. We work a lot with state agencies, thinking about transportation and flooding. We work with public health and heat stress and how people might be exposed to unsafe conditions when outside practicing sports or doing outdoor labor. Really, climate touches anything, so everything is fair game.
The elephant in the room, it would seem, is that our climate seems to be changing. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Again, you want to make the distinction between weather and climate, but we have seen record heat this year. We've also seen, looks like maybe there's a drought coming on. We saw a lot of severe storms. Is this the kind of thing we would expect to see as our global temperatures start to rise?
It is. So we are making our extremes more extreme. We're supercharging our atmosphere, and we're seeing more of these 500-year floods happening back to back to back. This year will be one of the warmest on record in North Carolina's history. Raleigh is outpacing the rest of the country in terms of heat waves with intensity and duration. And then Wilmington is just seeing sunny day flooding more often than it used to.
What does sunny day flooding mean?
It means that there's tidal flooding that happens, but it's not any sort of big event that's happening. Really just your nuisance flood that floods the streets in your basement.
And we know that there are so many areas, particularly in the coastal plain and right on the coast, that are particularly susceptible, it seems, to increased flooding, right? Both storms and hurricanes and, as you say, sunny day flooding.
Yeah, and some of these cities are getting it from both sides. So you have these huge rivers, and last year was our wettest year on record in North Carolina. And then Hurricane Florence came along. So extreme rainfall, sea level rise, rivers flooding. Some of these cities are just getting walloped year after year.
We talked about sea level rise. You're probably aware that's been a topic of some controversy in our state, at least in the past, although one senses that maybe even folks who are predisposed to be climate change and climate crisis deniers are starting to have to acknowledge that things are changing. But it seems beyond a doubt that sea level rise is going to have a major impact on the coast of North Carolina in the decades ahead. Well, it's already having an effect, but certainly in the decades ahead, right?
Yeah, and you think about the Outer Banks, which are so precarious,
right.
And we have people living there, but they're also a really important ecosystem as well. We have military installations,
And
sea level rise could affect that as well.
It always seems to me that that's sort of one of the real indicators of all this, is that for those who have any doubt about the climate crisis, the fact that the military all over the globe, the United States military, is making plans for dealing with this ought to pretty much make it clear that the thing is real.
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at these things. The evidence is there, and people are taking it seriously and planning for it.
We're talking with Kathy Dello, the state climatologist for North Carolina, about the issues of climate and, of course, the climate crisis that continues to affect our state, our nation, and our globe. United Nations recently released a new report on Earth's changing oceans. And is that something that y'all would be aware of and follow and read when those kinds of big reports come out?
It is. I'm aware when these big reports come out. I've seen my share of reports. I've written my share of reports. And they all point to the same thing, that we are causing this problem and we need to do something about it.
Some people now refer to the geological age we live in now as the Anthropocene. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, I believe so.
That's the notion that basically humans and human activity has become the dominant force in driving so much of our geology and climate in the modern era. I guess we should talk some more about what some of the specific things that we're going to be having to grapple with in the decades ahead, and both here in North Carolina and around the world. We talked about sea level rise, talked about more intense weather, right? When you say that the weather will be more intense, that means more intense heat waves, also more intense cold weather as well?
So our high temperature records are outpacing our low temperature records.
Yeah, you can see that every night when you watch the weather. There are a lot more high records than low records. Yeah,
it was 100 degrees just a couple of weeks ago. The warmest day of the year at Raleigh-Durham Airport.
It was in October.
Warmest October day ever,
yes.
What we're seeing here is a really dynamic system that, even without climate change, operates in certain ways. And then we're just adding these heat-trapping gases to it. And performing an experiment on our planet that we've never done before in real time.
We could talk about so many environmental crises that plague our state and country and nation and the globe, I should say. But a lot of it is obviously being driven by carbon emissions. You know, we can talk about the spoiling of our lakes and rivers and our land, but the issue of carbon pollution obviously is front and center in the debate over the climate crisis.
One of the reasons that people get uncomfortable talking about climate change, because people feel a sort of responsibility or blame for it happening, but it's also happening to us. And we know that it's happening because of our carbon emissions, our fossil fuel use, our land use changes. And really, this is happening at a global level. It's not just any one of us causing this huge problem.
So basically what this is about is more CO2 going into our atmosphere, which then does what? How does that lead to higher temperatures?
Well, we've known for a very long time, back to the 1800s, that CO2 is a heat-trapping gas.
Okay.
So what we're doing is changing the composition of the atmosphere and adding more of that. It warms up our planet. We do have a greenhouse effect with or without climate change. That's what makes the planet livable. But we're just adding more of that to the atmosphere.
So this means more polar ice cap melting, which then leads to higher sea levels, right? Which then is going to be infringing on our coastlines all over the planet?
Yeah, so ice is contributing to sea level rise, but also warmer water just takes up more space.
That's right, it expands,
yeah.
Right? It also talks about the fact that the oceans are becoming more acidic. Is that right?
Yeah, the oceans have really kind of taken one for the planet, both in terms of the warming and absorbing some of this carbon pollution. So what happens is the CO2 dissolves in the water and the oceans become just a touch more acidic, which is inhospitable for things like oysters and other fish.
Yeah. We know that we've seen recent reports about the fact that we could expect lower and lower levels of seafood production in our oceans, absent some sort of positive change. There's obviously lots of other significant deleterious things we can look forward to, unfortunately, with climate change. What about its impact on agriculture? Is that another thing where we're likely to see more problems?
What we're seeing right now with climate change in North Carolina is that our nighttime temperatures are warming up faster than our daytime temperatures. And if you're a crop that needs a certain number of hours of cool temperatures, we're finding less of those. We need those for our stone fruits, our peaches.
I would have never thought about that. And then, of course, there's just the matters of drought and irregular spikes in the weather, I suppose, that would also make it tougher on less hardy crops to survive.
Yeah, so we're coming off the wettest year on record, 2018, in North Carolina, and it's been pretty dry this year. Yeah. So these back-to-back extremes, managing too much water and then not enough.
Okay, we've talked about all the bad stuff. No, probably not all the bad stuff, a lot of the bad stuff. We need to move forward. We need to come up, obviously, with things to do about this. And it would appear that the situation's pretty urgent. We need to get our act together, both locally, statewide, nationally, and globally. Governor Cooper, for instance, really has been calling for a clean energy plan, which calls for reducing greenhouse gas emissions by dramatic levels and limiting fossil fuel use. I take it that's something you think makes sense.
We know what we need to do, and we as a globe need to act. The people who are most affected by climate change are contributing the least to it. Poor nations, island nations, low-income communities.
So the people that live, for instance, in the vulnerable communities to flooding and probably don't have many resources and probably don't even use many resources are often the people most vulnerable to it.
Yeah, and North Carolina can't solve this problem alone,
of course,
but we can be a leader. And we have a moral imperative because we have been contributing to this problem in a way that some other people around the world aren't.
Sure. So talk to us about some of the specific things that we should be doing as a state, maybe even as individuals and local communities. Are the things we should be, steps we should be taking?
Well, the most powerful thing that you can do as an individual is vote and talk to your neighbors. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about trusted sources, people don't know me. I just moved here. And sure, I've read all the reports. I've written the reports. But you talking to your neighbor or your family tends to be more impactful. So taking the science and communicating it in a way that makes sense to the people that you love.
What are some specific policy changes North Carolina could make that could model for other states and maybe for other parts of the globe? Governor Cooper's outlined some ideas. What do you see as things that would make sense for us to do?
So we as a planet need to cut our carbon emissions, and states can be the leader on this. California has certainly taken the lead on doing this. And as we've seen in the past, when states step up and take the lead, sometimes the federal government will respond. And the federal government is not our most nimble institution, so it makes sense for the
to turn that ship around.
Makes sense for the states to take the lead on this. But as individuals, just being informed, knowing what's going on, and again, voting.
As you envision a best case scenario where we really get a handle on our use of fossil fuels and dramatically lower our carbon output, how would that happen? How can you envision that happening in a way that would both maybe even be beneficial to the economy and obviously to the planet?
Well, there's a huge opportunity here with green jobs. Mm-hmm. The coal industry does not have the number of jobs that it used to have. We have a lot of room for research and development. We have a huge opportunity to electrify our car fleet and have electric cars for many people, including in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Change is very difficult, but the people responsible need to be held accountable for this. So I think individual blame only goes so far.
Sure.
And strives to just frustrate us.
Electric cars, that's something that we should be supporting. We all maybe should start to consider that, look at that as a possible option for our personal lives. What about the move to solar energy, moving to sustainable energy away from gas-fired power plants and things that release methane and greenhouse gases into the air? Is that I take it, is part of the solution?
Yeah, we need to be looking at our entire portfolio and adding renewables into the mix. And I just moved here from the West Coast, where wave energy was an up-and-coming source of renewable energy. So harnessing the power of the ocean to create energy.
I know there's also been talk about offshore wind as another possible resource for adding electricity to the grid here in North Carolina. That's been looked at.
Yeah, there are so many other sources of clean energy.
What do you say, you know, some of the critics, the naysayers, the people who still refuse to sort of go along with this notion that we need to move away from carbon fuels will tell you, you know, solar panels, they pollute the environment and they got big problems with disposing them, and windmills kill lots of birds. And what do you say to them?
We need to do everything that we can. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be a silver bullet solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly coming up with really intuitive ways to create these things with lower waste. But the climate crisis is our most pressing environmental problem. So some of the other stuff doesn't even matter if Right. we're moving into a world that's completely unlivable.
I guess that's the ultimate concern. What about the issue of mass transit? That's another issue that remains controversial in some areas, but it seems like another factor in driving down our carbon emissions.
Absolutely. We drive a lot as a country, and I'm certainly guilty of it.
Yeah.
But having people take the train or walk or bike, but incentivizing it, making mm-hmm. it friendly to do so, is an easy win for cities.
And presumably building dense population constructs so that we have people living closer to work and not everybody's commuting 30 miles to work every day and sitting on the freeway every day for long extended periods.
Yeah, affordable housing is a piece of that.
Yeah, I know that with mass transit, we've often seen that when you build mass transit systems without a requirement of affordable housing, well, what happens? People of means move in around the transit hubs and low-income people are sort of shut out, and then they end up moving to the suburbs to commute to work in their less fuel-efficient cars, which is not necessarily the solution. So if folks want to learn more about the work of the Climate Office, they could check you out at climate.ncsu.edu. Is that the website?
Correct.
And I know you say you don't predict the weather, but when I looked at it last time, the weather's on there, too. You can get, like, what's the weather around North Carolina, so you can check that out as well.
We do run a weather network. It's called the EcoNet, and it takes five-minute data at 43 sites across the state.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, that's something for weather geeks like me who would enjoy checking that out. I think folks should check it out. Kathy Dello, boy, you've got a big job. We wish you all the best. We hope you're here for many years to help North Carolina get its act together when it comes to this vitally important issue. No pressure there, but
thank you. I hope I'm here too.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We'll do this again sometime soon, I hope.
Yeah.
And check in on hopefully the progress we're making in the coming months.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Coming up next, we'll find out what North Carolinians think about President Trump, impeachment, and the 2020 election from one of the nation's top pollsters. Stay with us.